This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Monday, December 16th. This Wednesday, inevitably, a House divided will impeach President Trump. So let's talk about the Senate. Debate is now beginning over the crucial endgame question: what kind of trial will Donald Trump get? What kind of trial are the American people entitled to? Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has now sent a letter to his colleagues asking that White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney and National Security Advisor John Bolton be called to testify about the Trump-Ukraine scandal, something the White House blocked in the House, even though Bolton and Mulvaney have the ultimate inside scoop. Here is Schumer this morning on MSNBC.
This letter, I've sent it now to every one of my colleagues, Democrat and Republican. I hope some of my Republican colleagues will say, in all fairness, we ought to hear these people. There is not a single reason that has been given why the four witnesses we've asked for, while the documents we've asked for, should not be presented. I don't know what they'll say. Maybe they'll be exculpatory to President Trump. But to not have them is to engage in a cover-up.
Chuck Schumer this morning on MSNBC, which is quite a contrast to Mitch McConnell Thursday on Fox. McConnell, who's supposed to be the foreman of the Senate jury.
Everything I do during this, I'm coordinating with White House counsel. There will be no difference between the president's position and our position as to how to handle this to the extent that we can. We have no choice but to take it up, but we'll be working through this process, hopefully in a fairly short period of time, in total coordination with the White House counsel's office and the people who are representing the president in the well of the Senate.
So the foreman of the jury is coordinating with the lawyers for the defense. Let's start there today with Susan Glasser, who writes the letter from Trump's Washington column for The New Yorker. Steeped in world affairs as well as Washington politics, Susan has been editor of Foreign Policy magazine. She's been the Washington Post's Moscow bureau chief, and she's author of the book Kremlin Rising, Vladimir Putin's Russia and the End of Revolution. And for good measure, she also oversaw coverage of the Bill Clinton impeachment for The Washington Post, slightly qualified for this conversation. Susan, thanks so much for coming on today.
Brian, you're making me feel old.
We're all old if we remember the Clinton impeachment, right? For a little historical comparison then, just to start out, who was the Senate Majority Leader in 1998, and how much did he coordinate with one side or the other before the trial?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's actually come up as an issue over the last few days. It was Tom Daschle. You know, a Democrat, the Democrats held the Senate at this time, and he said that he did not speak directly with President Clinton during this, although he later clarified that his staff was coordinating. And in fact, my husband, Peter Baker, wrote a book about impeachment, The Breach, and we were just flipping through it over the weekend. And there's a great detail about how Charles Ruff, who was Clinton's impeachment counsel, arguing his case for him in the Senate, had worked out a signal with Democratic Senate aides where he would tap his pencil on the desk if he wanted them to ask a question on his behalf. So there was coordination, although perhaps not the same level of public communication about it. And I guess they would argue that it was more on tactics and procedures rather than the substance of how the trial would go forward.
Is there some wiggle room or benefit of the doubt to give McConnell in that quote? He's getting roundly bashed by the Democrats for being on a side when he's supposed to be the head juror. But he said there will be no difference between the president's position and our position to the extent that we can. Is he suggesting there's an extent to which he can't?
Well, I think he is. First of all, and by the way, that extent is pretty clear. It's 51 votes in the Senate, which is not the number that it takes to acquit or convict President Trump. It is the number that is required to set the rules for the trial. Basically, you need two-thirds to get rid of the president in an impeachment proceeding, but you only need 51 votes to determine and to have motions. So, for example, who's going to testify at the trial? And obviously, the Republicans have a much, pretty narrow majority, so they can't afford to lose more than a couple members on any individual motion. So that may mean that Mitch McConnell can't deliver everything that Trump wants in terms of a trial. So I did read his comments on Hannity the other night is almost a negotiation with Trump. He's trying to persuade Trump not to get his expectations up that he's going to be calling Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and the whistleblower in the Senate trial, because McConnell probably doesn't have the votes to do that.
Huh. What's your understanding of what Trump and McConnell each want?
Well, again, I do think, you know, in recent days, Trump has been almost triumphalist about this, perceiving this to be a political boon for him, aggressively not only raising money off of it, but what you see is this very interesting situation where both Trump and Republicans are the ones talking about impeachment more publicly than Democrats, and seeing a political interest in preserving and continuing the conversation, continuing the trial, was something that Trump was saying he was going to do. McConnell, Lindsey Graham, other Trump allies in the Senate trying to persuade him that that's not actually in his interest and that they should have a relatively short, say, two-week trial and not call witnesses. McConnell was quoted saying behind closed doors to his caucus that it would be mutual assured destruction if they went that route. And so, you know, there's this kind of shadow boxing, negotiating with Trump that's going on.
What do you think of Schumer then asking McConnell to let Mulvaney and Bolton testify? If McConnell thinks it's mutual assured destruction, Schumer seems like he thinks it would highlight Trump's obstruction of Congress in real time and, you know, make McConnell, who's up for re-election next year, complicit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been surprising to a certain extent that Democrats have not been more aggressive on this point. And, you know, they made a tactical decision to proceed with impeachment in the House without going to court to pursue the testimony of John Bolton, for example, even though Bolton, the former national security advisor, was clearly very skeptical of what Trump was doing with Giuliani in Ukraine. He spoke of it to his staff as a drug deal. He said Giuliani was a grenade that would blow them all up. And yet he's failed to, you know, produce this crucial evidence for the country. And, you know, you would think that there would be a pretty strong legal case that the House of Representatives would have that he should testify in a constitutional impeachment proceeding. But they made a decision to proceed without it and not to go to court. And so now you have Schumer saying, but we want him to testify anyways in the Senate trial in order to determine what to do with this. So I think it's an important argument for the Democrats.
When Schumer was on Morning Joe today, they asked him a question that I've been wondering about. How about a deal? The Republicans keep saying they want to call Hunter Biden and Adam Schiff. So how about from Schumer's side, we'll give you Hunter Biden and Adam Schiff if you give us Bolton and Mulvaney. Here's Schumer's response.
We don't want it dilatory, and we certainly don't want all these shiny object, extraneous issues, conspiracy theories. You know, if Lindsey Graham wants to pursue conspiracy theories, he can go ahead and do that in the Judiciary Committee. If he does it here, he demeans the Senate, he demeans the Constitution, and the American people.
So, no deal, says Chuck Schumer.
Well, look, obviously in Washington, there's no deal until there's a deal, right? But I do think that it's hard to imagine Democrats agreeing to that, and it's frankly hard to imagine Republicans. The truth is that the stakes are much higher for Trump in this deal. Having John Bolton testify under oath for a Senate trial would be very, very damaging, almost certainly, to the president. Whereas Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, they have no direct knowledge, obviously, of this scheme on the part of the president, which is a political scheme that they're not involved in. And so, you know, remember also that Trump's goal here was not even, it appears, to have an investigation as much as it was to cause political damage to Biden by asking the Ukrainians to publicly announce something. That seemed to be more important, according to the testimony of Gordon Sondland and others. It seemed to be more important to Trump to get us to talk about Biden than it was to investigate him.
Yeah, that fact seems established. But, you know, personally, Susan, as a journalist and as an American, not an aside, I'll admit it, I'd be interested in a deal. Hunter Biden and Adam Schiff for Mick Mulvaney and John Bolton. Just get it all out on the table after coming this far. I wonder if there could be a bipartisan movement for that.
Well, it's a good question. I agree absolutely that it's quite frustrating to not have heard from the key figures in this case. And the stonewall, I think, on the documents, by the way, is as significant from the point of view of really getting to the bottom of what actually happened as it is to hear for the verbal testimony, you know, of others. But you have the White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney, who's spoken in public about this. Getting him under oath seems pretty important. Did he mean it or not when he spoke to the American people and said that he and Trump had discussed and linked explicitly the nearly $400 million in security assistance with the investigations? That's pretty important. It would also be important to get the paper trail. When actually did Mulvaney communicate the order from Trump to freeze this aid? Isn't it incredible that we're about to impeach the president this week, and I still don't know a date certain when that happened?
Let's talk to Desiree calling in. Hi, Desiree. You're on.
Hi. So I think entertaining the idea of calling Hunter Biden or Joe Biden as witnesses is pandering. I don't think that that would offer anything to the investigation. It doesn't relate to the articles impeachment. We know for a fact, it's common sense, that all kinds of people are put on boards who aren't qualified to be on boards. That's just part of being a wealthy person. That's not an unusual thing. It's not an unusual thing in the United States. So I don't know why we're treating the idea that Hunter Biden not being qualified to be on a board for Burisma is some kind of weird, aberrant thing that needs to be investigated. I don't see the benefit to progressives or to the Democratic Party in entertaining something that we know isn't relevant just so people can say that we did it. Like, I feel like anybody who actually is really paying attention to the facts may not have made up their mind yet, will still take facts seriously that are relevant to the issue.
The question that Schumer was asked was, mm-hmm. would you make the deal, Hunter Biden and Adam Schiff, for Mick Mulvaney and John Bolton to get those two crucial witnesses out there on the record, or at least to put pressure on the Republicans to make them look even more like they're withholding the evidence? Because right now it's stuck. Right now, unless something changes, and we don't know what that would be, we know how this ends. Trump is not removed.
I get you want to change the trend of the polls and to get the American people, the people who have been polled, to be more on board with the entire impeachment situation. There's no guarantee that he will be taken out of office. I get that. And I feel like that's a risk I would be willing to take for the purpose of acknowledging that a standing president has violated the Constitution. Or at the very least, we suspect he has violated the Constitution and violated his office. And we're not going to let that go just because we might not be able to get the votes to get him out.
Desiree, thank you so much. Susan Glasser, you wanted to get in there?
Well, look, your caller's correct. But the bottom line, Brian, is it's not going to happen. Mitch McConnell has made it very clear that he doesn't have 51 votes at the moment in his conference to allow Hunter Biden and Joe Biden to participate, and that would make the Senate trial into a circus. And, you know, there's enough Republicans who are queasy about that or who at least feel that there needs to be the appearance of a somber and genuine process. So it's not going to happen.
Is there any other way to get Mulvaney and Bolton, in your opinion? Or should the Democrats just give up on that and Schumer has it as a talking point as of this morning, but that's all?
No, I don't think it's 100% done. I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, you need the votes of a majority of the senators, a simple majority of the senators, not two-thirds of the senators, which means you need to convince five moderate Republican senators that evidence is necessary.
You have a good quote in your latest article about how stuck they are from Democratic Congressman Jamie Raskin. He told you, "I feel the evidence is overwhelming, unrefuted, and incontrovertible. I feel our constitutional argument is airtight, but I still feel as if we have not broken through the ideological sound barrier that connects to the half of America that is watching Fox News and thinks vaguely that Donald Trump is draining the swamp rather than swimming in it." Jamie Raskin, what are your thoughts about what Congressman Raskin told you?
Yeah, I'm glad you highlighted that quote. I also thought it was pretty striking, that image of the ideological sound barrier, you know, the notion that facts are essentially like being thrown against it, and yet they're unable to penetrate. I think that's a useful metaphor for understanding the political situation we're in. You know, one thing that has been interesting and striking in terms of if you want to think of the impeachment process as a sort of a crisis that gives us the ability to sort of take a barometer, a baseline for where we are. One thing that's been notable is that you have seen Republican members of Congress, even key Republican members of Congress who you might not have thought a year or 2 years ago would become slavish defenders of Donald Trump, not only saying, well, I'm not sure if this is impeachable, even though it looks bad, but they've essentially doubled down on defenses of the president that require the willful suspension of facts, of disbelief. And I've been really struck by that. You had one of Raskin's colleagues on the Judiciary Committee, Debbie Lesko from Arizona, after the committee vote on the articles of impeachment the other day. She was asked by reporters, well, you know, what do you think, though, about the president asking foreign officials to investigate his 2020 opponent? She said he didn't do that. And the report said, well, actually, Congresswoman, he literally said Joe Biden in the phone call with Ukraine's president, according to the transcript put out by the White House. She said, no, he didn't say that. They said, but Congresswoman, she said, no, he didn't say that. And I think that's the ideological sound barrier in action that is still very hard for, you know, independent observers like us to process.
It's so sad thinking about what we've come to, in that the country cannot see the same facts in the same way, massively divided, even though to the Democrats and to a lot of neutral observers, the facts seem so clear. And I guess if they're not going to roll the dice on some of these things that seem ethically sketchy, like making that kind of deal, none of the callers like that idea, it must be ultimately supremely frustrating to Nancy Pelosi and a lot of Democrats, but it, I guess, has to be acceptable to them to impeach simply to lay down a marker for history, even a one-party marker, to say to future generations that, yes, the country was too divided to remove this president from office, but half the country did see him as a unique threat to democracy.
Well, that's right. I think at this point, that's, you know, essentially everybody this week is making their argument for history, Brian. And, you know, just one point I think that is important to note, which is it's not even that the two sides are interpreting the same facts differently. If you are living in the world of facts as presented by Giuliani and the media universe he is operating in, if you're living in the world of facts as presented by Fox, or at least certainly their primetime lineup, what you're hearing is not the same facts interpreted differently. It's the exact opposite version of the facts, in which Trump was talking about corruption and not Joe Biden, in the phone call in which he was talking about Joe Biden and never mentioned the word corruption. It's a world in which you're not talking about the facts where the president was conditioning aid on something, but you're actually talking about a totally alternate narrative of the 2016 election, for example, in which it was Ukraine and not Russia which interfered in the 2016 election campaign. You had someone like Ted Cruz amplifying and saying that publicly after Fiona Hill, the top Russia expert of the Trump administration, testified under oath that this is a debunked conspiracy theory and literally begged Republicans not to push this false set of facts.
It means it's a divide based on lies, and they don't care that they're lying. Now, we started the segment by saying we both remember the Clinton impeachment. He started by lying that he did not have sexual contact with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. When he got caught, he admitted it and apologized.
Well, that's right. There is, I think, that one notable difference is the extent to which President Trump has never even felt compelled to express any chagrin or regret. And obviously, we know that's not his way as a politician. In this situation, even on the brink of impeachment, he continues to insist that he had a perfect phone call with the Ukrainian president, and that, in fact, all of his actions toward Ukraine were not only perfect but noble in some way. And obviously that is not the route that was taken by Bill Clinton. Another difference, perhaps, is that, there is a defense to be made of President Trump on this, absolutely. And I always thought that by the time we got to the Senate, that essentially it would revolve around the constitutional issue, that you would have Republican defenders of the president saying, well, okay, that perhaps was regrettable, or obviously we don't think it's a good idea for the president to be soliciting foreign involvement in our election, but we don't think it rises to the level of something that he should be removed from office for. So that always seems to me like a defense that we would expect to hear, and that is a reasonable defense in our system, right? That would be grounds to fight it out on. What's been remarkable is that Trump has insisted that Republicans not defend him with that argument. And instead, he's demanding that they defend him both on the facts and on the basis that he did nothing wrong.
Susan Glasser writes the letter from Trump's Washington column for The New Yorker. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
Before we go, listeners, here's a new invitation for you to have your voice heard on the podcast. We've now completed our project, collecting your proposed articles of impeachment. Now we're inviting voicemail messages from anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office. Tell us why. You might be a Republican who thinks he did nothing wrong. You might be a Democrat who thinks bad but not impeachable. Maybe you think, well, Pence would be worse. Or whatever. If you are anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office, call in and tell us why. Leave your voicemail at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK, and maybe we'll use yours on the air. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.